every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to Seven Circles.
We're back, bitches! Season 2, yeah!
I am Autumn, and this is my highly inappropriate co-host, Dan.
Ahoy, hoy.
Today, we have a thing, a story, and we wish to tell it to you.
Well, you do. I'm just here because otherwise you beat me. Please help me.
When you hear the word Urkhammer, what comes to mind?
A German porn star.
That would be absolutely the best porn star name.
Yeah. Urk the Hammer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it's not Iowa, though. But that's where we are taking y'all today. Iowa, the middle of the USA.
Forgive my substandard US geography, but is that right?
Yes, Iowa is located above Missouri in the middle of the fucking United States.
Oh. Well, okay.
It's unknown when Urkhammer, Iowa was established. But in the 1920s, Urkhammer was a bustling township. It was a typical rural town with a small shopping district downtown surrounded by streets with homes. And the further out you got, the more the town spread out into farmlands and such. In 1928, a traveler was passing through Urkhammer and needed to refuel. Upon reaching a gas station, he found the station to be completely empty. So the traveler decided to drive into town to see if he could find a station there.
Because every small town in America certainly had more than one gas station in the 1920s.
Yes.
They did. God damn, that's a good point.
Because there weren't very many cars back then, I reckon. He had been to Urkhammer many times before.
So he should have fucking known if there are any more gas stations then, shouldn't he?
Yeah, I guess. What an idiot.
God.
Foolish man.
But he found it odd that the gas station had been closed in the middle of the day. Despite the road signs saying that the town of Urkhammer was close, he never actually made it to the town. The town was just not there anymore. He drove for 4 miles through what should have been the town, but there was nothing. The buildings and the people were all gone. So, being nearly out of gas, he got back on the highway and headed to the next town. Other people claim to have reached Urkhammer, but only to find deserted streets, abandoned houses, and not a single sign of its inhabitants. According to the last census of the town carried out in 1920, Urkhammer had a population of 300 inhabitants, and their fate is a complete mystery to this day.
This sounds like some paint my wagon shit. You remember that movie?
No.
I know you love a good musical, you must have seen that.
No.
Really?
Yeah, really, I have never even heard of that.
Clint Eastwood singing?
What?
Oh yeah, that was a good one. And that old fellow with the white hair who was always drunk, can't think of his name, but yeah, fucking great movie.
Okay.
And at the end, I don't want to spoil this fucking, you know, 60-year-old movie for anyone here, but yeah, at the end, the entire town just disappears and sinks into the ground. And it was actually really cool because the special effects were all practical, so this whole town just like fucking sunk into the ground on hydraulics. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah, pretty good for like 6-year-old Dan on a Sunday afternoon, on a rainy Sunday. Yeah, it's good times. Gosh. It's such an exciting childhood. Anyway, at the time, a local Iowa newspaper published a story of Urkhammer having vanished, but the Great Depression happened and the story faded into the background. A police officer from Oak Meadow, one of the neighbouring towns, went to visit a relative in Urkhammer. This man attested to the total abandonment and neglect of the city. He came to enter the house of his relative, and although he found various personal objects, he did not find any sign of life. The sheriff's office was also abandoned, with no trace of the fate of the villagers. Odd though the stories were, Urquhammer, located along Route 41, was still just another town to passers-by who would wave to children playing in the yards as they drove along the road.
Some people say that Urquhammer was hit by a sandstorm, and that could be the reason that the town just vanished. The road signs that all pointed to Urquhammer ended up vanishing over the years as well. The only thing left in the area is a tall iron feeding post for livestock. In 1990, a real estate group decided to build in the area. However, when the contractors located the ruins of a small town under the dust dunes, the project was canceled. To this day, it is impossible to know what happened to all the residents of Urquhammer, and it is one of the many mysteries that the state of Iowa holds. So where did Urquhammer go?
Nowhere. That's where. It never existed. It's one of the most random, obscure urban legends we've ever heard about. But a whole-ass town or city vanishing is not unheard of. We talked about this in our Croatoan episode during Season 1.
We did.
So, yeah, Urquhammer did never actually exist.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Unless you get on Pornhub, you might find him on there, I don't know.
You will. Let's go to Montana next. In the eastern plains of Montana,
which is in the deep south of the USA.
What? No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we established that my US geography was pretty outstanding.
No, it's Montana's in the very northern part of the USA, next to Canada.
I know, it's directly between us and Canada, right?
It's next to us.
It's not though, is it, Autumn?
We are directly south of Canada, and Montana is kind of next to us.
That is entirely untrue. We do not border Canada, unless perhaps the panhandle does, but there's an entire fucking state above us, between us. Google time! So we just brought up a map, and Autumn is still arguing with me that Montana is not north of Idaho.
Idaho sits directly next to Montana and directly south of Canada.
Half of Montana borders Idaho to the north.
Correct, but if you live in northern Idaho, Montana is next to Idaho.
There is very little of it where that would really be considered to be the case, isn't there?
But it's still the case. I'm right, you're wrong.
You're an idiot, I'm not.
Where were we?
Idaho. Maybe if you knew that, you'd fucking understand where Montana is.
Montana is purgatory.
No, that was Wyoming. Come on, man. Keep up. Wyoming is just fucking awful, though. I'm sorry to any Wyomlings.
Okay.
Is that what they're called?
Let's continue.
Are they called Wyomlings?
Wyomingers.
What? Wyomingers. Just a bunch of fucking mingers.
Okay. Fuck off. Okay.
So, in Montana...
I know where I'm at. So, in the eastern plains of Montana, there's set a little town called Langville. This town is said to have vanished in the early 2000s. They say that it was visible on Google Maps for many years after it disappeared. We tried to see if it's still there on the maps of Google. It is not. There is not a single shred of evidence supporting the fact that Langville was ever a real place. But people keep talking about it all over the internet, and they have been for some time. There is even a legend saying that early discussions of the town vanishing on the internet message boards and chat rooms have been erased as well. Some people say that this town has vanished because of the Mandela effect. And if you...
Oh, that was vomit.
You okay?
No, carry on.
And you will find loads of Montana locals that swear that Langville used to be an actual place.
Maybe it did exist, and the Google Maps car, which, as we've discussed previously, was an autonomous vehicle, went haywire and ran everyone over.
Murder car. So, do you know what the Mandela Effect is?
Of course I do. It's all fractal, baby.
What?
The Mandela Effect. Those pretty geometric spiritual symbols.
No, we're talking about the Mandela Effect.
Yeah, the Mandela Effect.
No, Mandela.
Mandela. I know, it's what I said, yeah. What's wrong?
You're wrong.
The, you know, Nelson Mandela, that famous artist who made all the pretty patterns and stuff.
No. What? You're an idiot. So let's talk about the Mandela Effect real quick.
You're saying it wrong, man. It's Mandela Effect.
Psychologists and more rational people will call it... God damn it.
They'll call it what, Autumn?
Shut up. Psychologists and more rational people will call the Mandela Effect a false memory phenomenon.
Like deja vu or a glitch in the Matrix.
Precisely. This happens when a person recalls something that did not happen or recalls it differently from the way it happened. And there have been loads of studies related to this phenomenon. One of them is the word lists.
The what?
The word lists. One of them is the word lists.
Okay then. What? This Mandela Effect just sounds like Rohypnol to me. Honestly, you know. Chicks recalling things differently from the way they happened. Anyway, one can trigger false memories by presenting subjects with a continuous list of words. When subjects are presented with a second version of the list and asked if the words had appeared on the previous list, they found that subjects did not recognize the list correctly. When the words on the two lists were semantically related to one another, like sleep and bed, or anus and Dan's penis, it was more likely that the subjects did not remember the first list correctly and created false memories.
So, false memories can sometimes be shared by multiple people, and this is the Mandela Effect.
Mandela Effect, Autumn.
His name is fucking Mandela.
Is it though, or is this the effect at work?
Dan?
Yes?
I'm going to ask you some questions, and without Googling the answer, I want you to tell me the first answer that comes to your mind.
Very well.
When did Nelson Mandela die?
Like 4 or 5 years ago? I don't know, a while. Having spent 27 years locked not in a windowed room, but in a barred one.
He died in like 2008.
Okay, so... Was it that long ago, though?
Yeah.
I mean, you told me not to Google it, but now I want to.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about this part later.
What, Mr. Mandela?
Mandela.
Okay.
Does the Monopoly Man wear a monocle?
Yes.
In Star Wars, does he say, "Luke, I am your father"?
No. He says,
"Who's your daddy now, you crippled little bitch?"
Jesus Christ. Is it the Berenstain Bears or the Berenstain Bears?
I have no idea what those are, but based on your spelling here, it's absolutely Berenstain. Unless they're the mascot for some laundry detergent company, because Berenstain isn't the way that name would ever be spelled by anyone. Well, perhaps Americans.
Does Curious George have a tail?
Now you're just making shit up. Who, or if he does have a tail, potentially what the fuck is Curious George?
Curious George is a monkey in children's books, and people often remember him having a tail.
If he was a monkey, then yes, he quite probably did. Otherwise, he was probably an ape. Because, you know, education.
So I remember the Monopoly Man having a monocle. I remember Nelson Mandela dying in prison.
Well, that's incredibly ignorant.
I remember Darth Vader saying, "Luke, I am your father."
Yeah, that's a common one, though. What did he actually say?
In this timeline, he says, "No, I am your father." And the Monopoly Man does not have a monocle. And Nelson Mandela died in, like, 2008. And Curious George had no tail. And it's the Berenstain Dane Bears, not the Berenstain Bears.
Are they American?
Who, the Bears?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay, well, yeah, they obviously just wanted to make them non-Jewish bears then, didn't they?
Anyways.
Yeah, so there was a lot of American guff in there that I've never heard of, Autumn. You need to leave the safety of the homeland and give me some other non-American examples, dude.
We should absolutely go on Google and look in England and see if they have any Mandela effect issues over there.
I mean, of course we do, but they won't mean anything to you, will they?
Probably not, just like these meant nothing to you. Oh, that's sad.
Like, what color was Spotty Man in Super Ted?
What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Well, now I want to know, because I think that is actually one that I've seen listed. Hold on. Was he yellow with green spots, or was he green with yellow spots? Okay, so for those of you who care, Spotty Man was yellow with green spots and a red mohawk. And he brought Super Ted to life, of course. But we just saw the monkey, supposed monkey. What was it? What was he called? Curious George. Right. I mean, he is obviously meant to be a chimpanzee, and he would therefore obviously not have a fucking tail.
Curious George was a monkey with a tail.
He was a fucking chimpanzee, Autumn.
Okay. Carry on.
I mean, you just saw the pictures, didn't you?
Carry on. It's a cartoon monkey.
Yeah?
How can you tell if he's a monkey or a chimpanzee if he's a fucking cartoon?
Because monkeys look like monkeys and chimpanzees look like chimpanzees, Autumn.
Okay.
I don't know if this is really coming through in the tone of her voice, but Autumn is getting very upset about Curious George being a chimpanzee and not a monkey. Wow, was this a beloved childhood cartoon for you?
Yeah, I read all the books.
There were books about this fucking ape?
Yes.
About this curious ape?
Monkey.
I mean, honestly, only an American would fucking make a curious ape and not a cat. It should be a cat, right? Cats are curious.
We digress.
Monkeys are... What are monkeys known for? Cats are curious and monkeys are...
They throw their poo at you when you visit them at the zoo.
Yeah. So they're mischievous and fecal matter throwing. Anyway.
You get the idea. Most of the Mandela effects surround the branding of food and stuff. Those are small things that don't really bother me, but it's the more outlandish ones that do.
Like chimpanzees with tails.
And what's interesting is that this all started in 2009 after the Large Hadron Collider did its thing. And it was widely discussed on MySpace. It all started with a researcher called Fiona Broom. She had been discussing Nelson Mandela and how he died in prison, only to find out that he was released after serving 27 years and was still alive in 2009. Her mind was blown. She shared this memory with others, and half the people she spoke to were like,
"Yeah, I thought he died."
And this is when the Mandela effect was born.
I don't want to rain on your parade here, Autumn, but I just don't know that we can really go ahead and give mass ignorance a fancy name. We could call it the dumb shit effect, if you like. Also, I just googled this Fiona Broom and instantly saw in her very brief bio what I needed to know. Nationality? American.
Rude.
It goes on, as you said, to state her occupation as researcher. You know, like anti-vaxxers and flat earthers do fucking research.
No, she went to college!
She went to college? I mean, so did I, Autumn, but look at me. Curious George probably went to fucking college, Autumn, but he's still a fucking monkey.
Yeah, he is a monkey.
Yeah. Oh, and she wrote a book entitled Armchair Reader, Weird, Scary and Unusual Stories and Facts. So, before we go mentioning Fiona Broom the researcher in the same breath as something actually impressive like the Hadron Collider, let's try not to misinform our listeners about the legitimacy of the source of this ignorance effect.
One theory for the basis of the Mandela effect originates from quantum physics and relates to the idea that rather than one timeline of events, Multiple alternate realities or universes may be coinciding and mixing with our timeline.
Yes. Autumn thinks that she lives in the timeline where Nelson Mandela died in 1980, the year of the birth of our great Lord and Saviour, 10 years before he was actually released, very much alive and kicking, well, kinda, you know, after 27 years incarcerated, and 11 years before Ice-T wrote about his release.
What? Ice-T? What?
You've never listened to Ice-T's album from 1991 called OG?
I think I've heard one song off of there, maybe.
It's a good album, Autumn.
Okay. And the Bible said that the lion lay with the lamb, but apparently the lion never laid with any lamb. That's not what it says in this timeline.
What does it say?
It was a wolf, not a lion.
It was a what?
A wolf.
A what?
The wolf lied with the lamb.
You mean a wolf with an L in it?
Yes. Will you Google it real quick so I can see exactly what it says?
I don't need to Google it. I know there's an L in wolf.
No, I just want to see what it exactly says.
Oh, the Bible?
Yes.
Not the spelling of the word wolf.
Google wolf.
Okay, so according to Google, it says, "The wolf shall also dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them." And the reference to a little child is sometimes thought to be a prophecy of Jesus' birth. So wait, what? They wrote this shit before Jesus was born?
Yeah, a lot of the Bible was written before he was born.
Anyway.
It's called the Old Testament.
And who's the leopard going to lie down? What kid's that, Autumn?
Probably a goat.
Oh, there you go. I was hoping you wouldn't know that so I could take the piss out of you, but here we are. Autumn did a smart.
The theory suggests that when the Large Hadron Collider...
the what?
That's how I say it. It's the Large Hadron Collider. So when it first fired up, it created a disruption in this timeline in reality, and that there are alternate realities kind of weaving in and out of each other at all times. But you cannot prove that alternate realities don't exist. So shush.
I'll bet there's an alternate reality where you didn't write Hadron Collider in the script, and I didn't make a joke about that time my Hadron Collider fired up and disrupted your mama's timeline.
I think every single Autumn in every single timeline will absolutely say Hadron Collider.
That's all right. I think every single Dan in every single reality will wreck your mama.
There he goes with those your mama jokes again. Back in season 2, original content.
You know it. Your mum's got some original content. It's my scene.
So going back to what we were talking about before we got into the whole Mandela effect.
Mandala.
So the fact that a whole town could have existed at one point and now just doesn't exist at all because some people just don't remember it existing in this timeline is not too far-fetched.
That in your mind is not too far-fetched. I mean, it's quite far-fetched, Autumn. Like, it's based in some degree of science. So I'll give it just enough credence to not say that it's total bullshit, and I'll admit that I do like the idea quite a lot. But until Rick and Morty appear behind me with an Urkhammer road sign, I'm going to say it's pretty unlikely. Alternate dimensions? Sure. Intertwined, overlapping, and smushing? No, I don't think so.
Smushing dimensions.
That's the technical term, Autumn. Dimension smushing. You never read that?
No.
No? Mm. In fucking Stephen Hawking's works? The dimension smushing?
I've never actually read his works. Oh my god.
I mean, I love you, but it might be a bit of a stretch, my dear. I'm so sorry.
This coming from a guy who literally just said... He literally just said that he's read 10 books in his life, whereas I have read more than 10.
Yeah? But, like, 5 of those were Twilight.
Fuck off!
Oh, yeah, I don't like to read. I just, absorb knowledge through osmosis. So, far-fetched or not, Autumn's name was always spelled with an N at the end, like any regular non-redneck folk would spell it. But she lost her birth certificate in 2010 and had to order a new one. The state she was born in sent her one without the N at the end. She called them up, furious, demanding to send the correct spelling. They said that this was what they had on record, even though her original document had the correct spelling all her life.
So is this Mandela effect or human error? Either way, the state refused to believe that the N on the end was the correct spelling, so now I get to walk around with A-U-T-U-M as my damn name.
And I'm literally embarrassed for you every single day. Anyway, didn't you say this was due to a fire at the hospital you were born in, and the original was destroyed? Then whatever useless fucking government scroat who re-entered your name got it wrong.
Yeah, that's what they told me, but I don't know what's happening anymore.
So, natural disaster, human error, not Mandela effect.
It was the Mandela effect.
The Mandela effect.
I'm in a different timeline than you.
So was Nelson Mandela.
Fuck off.
Okay, let's talk about a real town that vanished. Well, it did not vanish, but it did inspire the films and video games called Silent Hill. This is the story of a town called Centralia in Pennsylvania. Many of the Native American tribes in what is now Columbia County sold the land that makes up Centralia to colonial agents in 1749 for $500.
So wait, the natives got money for their land? That's it. I'm celebrating Thanksgiving this year.
Sometimes they did. Very rarely, but sometimes they did.
Wow. And they just keep on bitching about it, huh? I'm sorry. I kid. Like a baby goat.
In 1798, a French sea captain and banker by the name of Stephen Girard purchased the land from a guy called Robert Morris. Fun fact, Robert Morris was one of the rich white dudes who signed the Declaration of Independence.
Wow, that's probably one of the most fun facts I've ever heard.
But he was broke and needed the cash at the time and made 30 grand when he sold to Stephen Girard. And Girard quickly discovered that the land had a fuck ton of coal in it. He moved a mining engineer called Alexander Ray onto the land and told him that he was in charge. So Ray began to build up a mining town, and he called it Centralia, or...
Centralia.
Centralia. In 1856, the mines began to open and the town began to flourish. A railroad line had already been built through the town many decades before the town was even a town.
So it wasn't then, was it? They just built a railroad through some land.
Yeah. But it was there, so they were able to utilize that to transport the bajillions of tons of coal they were pulling out of the earth.
Was it actually bajillions?
Yes.
How many zeros are there in a bajillion?
17.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
According to the numbers from federal census records, the town of Centralia reached its maximum population of 2,761 in 1890. At its peak, the town had 7 churches, 5 hotels, 27 saloons, 2 theaters, a bank, a post office, and 14 general and grocery stores.
Were there brothels?
Probably.
At what point did all but one of the US states become boring and outlaw prostitution?
Probably around the same time that booze became illegal.
Oh. Cause what? Cause you don't want to bang a hoe if you're sober?
Exactly.
I don't know if that's strictly true though, do you?
37 years later, the production of anthracite coal had reached its peak in Pennsylvania. In the following years, production declined, as many young miners from Centralia enlisted in the military when the U.S. entered World War I.
Ah, the penultimate war that was worth sticking your nose in.
The Wall Street crash of 1929 resulted in the Lehigh Valley Coal Company closing five of its Centralia local mines. Bootleg miners continued mining in several idle mines, using techniques such as what was called pillar robbing, where miners would extract coal from coal pillars left in mines to support their roofs. This caused the collapse of many idle mines, further complicating the prevention of a mine fire in 1962. Coal mining continued in Centralia until the 1960s, when most of the companies shut down.
In May 1962, the Centralia Borough Council hired five members of the Volunteer Fire Company to clean up the town landfill, located in an abandoned strip mine pit next to the Oddfellows Cemetery just outside of the borough limits. On May 27, 1962, the firefighters, as they had in the past, set the dump on fire and let it burn for some time. Unlike in previous years, however, the fire was not fully extinguished. An unsealed opening in the pit allowed the fire to enter the labyrinth of the abandoned coal mines beneath Centralia. In 1979, locals became aware of the scale of the problem when a gas station owner, then Mayor John Coddington, inserted a dipstick into one of his underground tanks to check the fuel level. When he withdrew it, it seemed hot.
So wait, he put his dipstick into something and pulled it out and it was hot?
Uh-huh.
Giggity.
He lowered a thermometer into the tank on a string and was shocked to discover that the temperature of the gasoline in the tank was 172 degrees.
172?
That's fucking hot!
That's almost a bajillion.
Statewide attention to the fire began to increase, culminating on February 14, 1981, when a 12-year-old resident named Todd Domboski fell into a sinkhole that suddenly opened up beneath his feet in a backyard. His cousin, 14-year-old Eric Wolfgang, pulled Domboski out of the hole and saved his life. The plume of hot steam billowing from the hole was tested and found to contain a lethal level of carbon monoxide. Or indeed not that fucking lethal, because they both lived. Anywho, in 1983, the US Congress allocated more than $42 million for relocation efforts. Nearly all of the residents accepted the government's buyout offers. More than 1,000 people moved out of the town and 500 structures were demolished. By 1990, the census recorded just 63 remaining residents.
In 1992, Pennsylvania Governor Bob Casey invoked eminent domain on all property in the borough, condemning all the buildings within. A subsequent legal effort by residents to overturn the action failed. In 2002, the U.S. Postal Service discontinued Centralia's zip code, which was 17927. Only 16 homes were still standing by 2006, which was reduced to 11 by 2009 when Governor Ed Rendell began the formal eviction of the remaining Centralia residents. Only 5 homes remained by 2010. Few homes remain standing in Centralia. Most of the abandoned buildings have been demolished by the Columbia County Redevelopment Authority or were reclaimed by nature. At a casual glance, the area now appears to be a field with many paved streets running through it. Some areas are being filled with new growth forests. The remaining church in the borough, St. Mary's, holds weekly services on Sunday. It has not yet been directly affected by the fire. The town's 4 cemeteries, including one on the hilltop that has smoke rising around and out of it, are maintained and good condition. And this is where we go back to the video games and the movie Silent Hill, like with the cemetery with the smoke coming out of the ground and the one remaining church that's still there. In the video games and the movie, the church is there and it's like all fiery and brimstone and shit. It's great.
Okay. Yeah, I never really got into those. I think I played the first one briefly and then I was like, oh, this is like Resident Evil, and I turned it off.
It's better. It's good.
Okay. Is that the one that has the dude with the weird fucking...
Pyramid Head!
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, right. That sexy motherfucker.
I like to call him Origami Head.
Okay.
Residents John Komaniski and John Lakitis, Jr. were evicted in May and July 2009, respectively. In May 2009, the remaining residents mounted another legal effort to reverse the 1992 eminent domain claim. In February 2012, the Commonwealth Court ruled that a declaration of taking could not be reopened or set aside on the basis that the purpose for the condemnation no longer exists. Seven people, including the Borough Council President, had filed suit claiming the condemnation was no longer needed because the underground fire had moved and the air quality in the borough was the same as that in Lancaster. In October 2013, the remaining residents settled their lawsuit, receiving $218,000 in compensation for the value of their homes, along with $131,500 to settle additional claims, and the right to stay in their homes for the rest of their lives.
People are so stubborn. Like, hey, you are living on top of actual fire.
But we were born here and this is where we're going to die. So, yeah. This fire that was set in 1962 by firefighters burns to this day. Good job, guys.
Woohoo! Okay, so let's go to Alaska next. In 1786, a British ship captain called Nathaniel Portlock sailed there and set up shop. He decided that this spot of land was a great place for a town, since it was right on the shore. It soon became a booming fishing community, and so the town of Portlock thrived and grew over the years. By 1915, there was a canning company and a cold storage facility to help store and sell all of the bazillions of fish they were pulling out of the water.
How many zeros are there in a bazillion?
17.
No, that was a bajillion.
Oh, a bazillion would be 24 zeros.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The township also helped the Pacific Eskimo communities to grow and thrive as well.
How un-American.
Everyone was happy. In 1921, they even got their own damn post office.
Shit, did they build the Eskimos a frickin' McDonald's too?
By 1930, though, rumors began to spread about a monster that was terrorizing neighboring towns and villages. 20 years later, the only person left alive in Portlock was the town postmaster.
So, was the postmaster the monster? Was he a post monster?
Holy shit! Maybe he was. Ooh, post monster. I don't think there's been a horror movie that's been about a post monster.
I mean, there was the movie called Postal.
That's different.
I mean, kinda. But yeah. He was a postman who went postal.
And that's based on a true story.
Have you seen it?
No. But a man did go postal once.
A man did go postal, and hence the word postal being coined.
Yeah.
But yeah, the movie, no. It's an Uwe Boll movie. Like the same guy that did Rampage.
Oh, okay.
Now, Rampage was a great movie.
Rampage was awesome.
Uwe Boll also did other weird vampire movies. But yeah, he did Postal. And,
no.
I mean, it's a great movie. The opening scene is two Arabs flying their plane into the Twin Towers. And before it hits, they literally call up Osama bin Laden to argue about how many virgins they're going to get.
Oh my God. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's that kind of a movie.
Holy shit. How have I not seen this?
It's great. I can't remember. I don't think that Gary Coleman was in it.
What?
Well,
why would Gary Coleman be in it?
Well, did you ever play the video games called Postal?
No.
By running with scissors. Okay, so I think the original Postal game was an isometric kind of top-down one, but the sequel, Postal 2, was a first-person shooter. And you could, you increased your health by smoking your crack pipe, and you could literally just unzip and run around and piss on people, and if you got enough of it in their face, they would start to puke. And there was a Postal 3, which sucked, but they've just released Postal 4, and yeah, I'm going to fucking buy it, because I want to run around and piss in people's faces again.
Okay.
But anyway, in those games, Gary Coleman actually starred in those games and voiced in them too. But yeah, there was a little person in the postal movie, but I don't think it was Gary Coleman. But anyway, highly inappropriate, complete nonsense, and virgins.
Where the fuck are we?
Oh, I don't know. Still in Idaho, just south of Montana, I think.
Or south of Canada.
Centralia.
By 1930, though, rumors begin to spread about a monster that was terrorizing neighboring towns and villages. So the first sign of trouble came in 1931 when a logger called Andrew Camelock was doing some, you know, logging in the mountains.
Is that Camelock or Camelock? Who cares? Is it Camelot Castle?
He did not come home after his shift, though, so his search crews went out to see what the fuck happened to him. His lifeless body was found on the forest floor, and his head had been caved in.
He's a lumberjack and he's not okay.
Someone had smashed in his skull with a piece of logging equipment. A few weeks later, a gold prospector left his cabin to do some prospecting in the mountains. He told his buddy where he was going, just in case he did not return.
And guess what? He did not return. Search parties were sent out, but he was never found. A few weeks after that, a group of canners went out on a hunting trip together in the same forest that the logger died in. It was also the same forest that the prospector vanished in. When they did not return, search parties were sent out. No trace of them was ever found. A few weeks later, a couple of hunters are out hunting in the same forest. People need to stay the fuck out of this forest, or...
Right?
I mean, you know, word spreads fast, but these dumb fucks still keep going there. They shot a moose and were tracking it. Moose. After a few minutes of tracking, they saw a different kind of track. A human-like track. But these tracks are about 18 inches long. I've been known to leave 18-inch muddy tracks, Autumn. Ah, yeah.
Gross.
They kept tracking the moose prints, and it seemed that the other thing was tracking the wounded moose as well. They tracked the moose for about an hour before they were about to give up. But they came upon a clearing, and there, in the middle of the clearing, was a patch of grass that had been disturbed. They began to notice that there were tufts of moose hair, spots of blood, and some guts littered randomly around the clearing as well. This is starting to remind me of that movie we watched the other day, The Ritual.
That was a pretty good movie.
It was a pretty good movie, yeah. I enjoyed it.
I liked The Beast.
The Beast was good.
Yeah, that was a really good movie. Kind of boring in some parts, but it was worth watching to the end because the beast at the end was worth it.
Totally worth it.
He was cool. He was a cool demon.
He was a cool...
Spoilers.
God.
Yeah. So, clearly the other thing that was tracking the moose had caught up with it. The hunters looked at each other and both decided that it was time to fuck off back to town.
Wise.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do actually realize that we just gave away the supernatural element of that movie.
Whoopsie. Sorry. Spoilers. They felt like they were being tracked themselves the whole way home. They got back to town and reported what they saw. The local Eskimo tribes said that it was the Nantanag. Fuck.
Nantanag.
The local Eskimo tribes said that it was the Nantanag.
I think the first time was the proper, true Eskimo pronunciation.
The Nantanag. Oh, fuck off, dude.
Which was half man, half beast.
People continued to go missing, and the town of Portlock was terrified. They were hard-pressed to leave their homes, even in the daytime. People slowly started to relocate to other towns, as far away as they could get from the forest. It got so bad that parents stopped letting their children attend school.
And we all know how well homeschooling works out.
People were too scared to even go to work.
Does that shit fly? Sorry, boss. Can't come to work today. I'm too scared.
I mean, if the whole town is scared, then yeah.
Definitely.
People just kept leaving Portlock, and in 1951, the town's remaining resident, Postmaster, he fucked off as well.
My money's on this dude being a fucking serial killer, man. I looked up the names of the Portlock postmasters. 1921 saw one Peter H. Ongstad. And in 1925, and I guess until the end of the tenure and until the end of Portlock, a chap called Adolf N. Nilsson. And, you know, people with Adolf, they're typically very reliable.
It's a cursed name.
But both of these were Norwegians who moved to Alaska because, you know, they fancied a change of climate. So, quite possibly murderous tendencies, you know, being Norwegians. Not that I want to give away our next episode.
Mm-mm. That's good, though. I didn't even think of the postmaster being the one who was doing all the killings, so good job.
I mean, you literally started with saying he was the last one there. So, everyone else died but the postmaster. Yeah, it seems like a pretty fucking obvious...
Obvious. It's obvious, Autumn.
It's so obvious.
I mean, that said, it's probably more likely just that...
Well then, in 1968, a hunter reported being chased out of the forest by a giant hairy man. He said he would cut off his own arm before ever being forced to return to Portlock. In 1973, three fishermen docked in Portlock to wait out a bad storm. The storm lasted for three whole days. They made camp on shore and huddled in their tents to stay dry. All three of them reported that for each night they camped there, they heard someone stomping around their tents. When asked if it might have just been an animal, the men swore that they knew the difference between a raccoon scampering and a big man stomping.
Because there are only little critters in Alaska. They killed all the moose. And if rough and tumble fishermen heard a dude outside their tent, they'd be out there to fight him. So this smells a little fishy to me. There, I said it. You're fucking welcome.
In 1990, a medic responded to a call for a native man who was incarcerated. While tending to the native's injury, the medic mentioned that he had recently been hunting in Portlock. The native sat up wide-eyed and asked the medic, "Did it bother you? Did you see it?" So was this beast a Yeti or a Bigfoot? Who knows? Nobody lives in Portlock and the remaining buildings are all rotting away. Maybe we could go there for Christmas holiday.
I was actually thinking that. I wouldn't mind getting snowed in without Wi-Fi for a few months. I'm sure my boss would understand. But hold on, are you just talking about Alaska or the Portlock specifically?
Portlock. Christmas holiday in Portlock.
Christmas Nantanag.
Okay, let's go to Italy next. Not for holiday, though, just for this episode.
Well, until you pull your finger out your ass and get a passport, we couldn't even if we wanted to, Autumn.
Well, if my name was Autumn with an N at the end, then I could get a fucking passport, couldn't I? There is a ghost town in the southern Italian region of Basilicata. The people left all of their personal belongings behind when they were forced to flee. If you visit the town to do some urban exploring, you can see books and dishes and cars, furniture, paintings, and clothes. All of these items still belong to those who left them behind. Only they are not allowed to come back to this town to retrieve them. Instead, thieves have been looting the abandoned town ever since. The urban explorers whose video we watched about this town wanted to keep the name of it a secret so that other thieves would have a hard time finding it. And we will honor that.
Assuming they were truly urbexes, Autumn, and you're not just depriving other thieves of the spoils.
Well, oh, ooh, yeah, maybe, oh god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful city nestled on the side of a mountain with winding cobblestone streets and breathtaking villas. These buildings are now unsafe to enter. They could literally collapse and slide down the mountain at any moment.
Like that place in Wales?
Yes.
Huh.
In 2010, the town experienced a terrible earthquake. Buildings toppled and people died. The quake caused damage to almost every house in the village. A day later, there was a large aftershock. Other cities in the region were affected, and overnight, around 10,000 Italians were displaced.
Mamma mia!
Mamma mia! Inappropriate!
Yes.
The video we watched about this town was filmed about 10 years after the earthquake. Already, nature has begun to take it back. There are vines growing into cracks in the walls, overgrown rose bushes completely taking over the gardens. In a lot of the homes, the walls are covered in black mold, grass and weeds pushing up through the cobblestone streets. It really is beautiful and dangerous. One more minor earthquake will completely flatten the whole town. And people who lived there for generations were forced to leave with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And it was a pretty remote area, so one could assume that some of those people had never even been to another town, or a city even. Life as they knew it changed in an instant.
Qué triste.
The fuck is qué triste?
How sad.
Oh, yeah, it's very sad. But that's the end of that town.
Yeah.
Literally. Let's go to Ashley, Kansas next.
Let's. At 3:28 a.m. on August 17th, 1952, a magnitude 7.9 earthquake was measured by the United States Geological Survey. The earthquake itself was felt through the state and most of the Midwest. The epicenter was determined to be directly under Ashley, Kansas. When state law enforcement arrived at what should have been the outskirts of the farming community, they found a smouldering, burning fissure in the earth measuring 1,000 yards in length and approximately 500 yards in width. The depth of the fissure was never determined. Sounds like the aftermath of my large hard-on collider.
Or your mom's vagina.
Wow. After 12 days, the statewide and local search for the missing 679 residents of Ashley, Kansas, was called off by the Kansas state government at 9:15 p.m. on the night of August 29, 1952. All 679 residents were assumed to be dead. At 2:27 a.m. on August 30th, a magnitude 7.5 earthquake was measured by the United States Geological Survey. The epicenter was situated under what used to be the location of Ashley, Kansas. When law enforcement investigated at 5:32 a.m., they reported that the fissure in the earth had closed.
Now, I ain't no religious man, but it sounds to me like those folks in Ashley were doing something mighty bad and hell just gone done sucked them up.
Probably. Only, this never happened. This was a creepypasta. Moreover, only one earthquake was ever recorded in Kansas in 1952, and that event occurred in April rather than August. An earthquake of magnitude 7.5 to 7.9 hitting Kansas would have become a local, if not national, lore. Much less a pair of such earthquakes occurring within 2 weeks of each other at the same site.
I mean, the same site is highly likely.
Yet no record of such geological occurrence in Kansas exists. And even if, in typical conspiracy theory fashion, the powers that be conspired to conceal whatever purportedly happened in Ashley, proof of the town's existence would remain in other texts, maps, and records predating 1952.
Next, let's go to Villa Epicuan, Argentina.
It's Epicuan! This town was a beautiful tourist village near Buenos Aires. In 1985, this town vanished, though. In 1985, there was a massive flood and the entire town was submerged under the ocean. Many people made it out alive. As of 2008, the water level has decreased dramatically, though, due to global warming, and parts of the town are starting to reveal themselves after being drowned for decades.
Wait, did global warming cause the ebb or the flood?
Possibly both.
True.
Yeah. You can see rusty automobiles and crumbled buildings if you fly over in a helicopter or a small airplane. There are still telephone poles and some cement picnic benches, too. They're all white and chalky from being in the salt water. It's pretty cool looking. And yes, this story was real.
Chalky from the salt water. Not salty from the salt water.
No, they just look like chalk. Or salt pillars.
It might look like chalk, but it was salt, wasn't it?
Yeah. Definitely wasn't chalk. Let's go to Canada!
In 1930, a newsman in The Par, Manitoba,
reported on a small Inuit village right off of Lake Angikuni. The village had always welcomed the fur trappers who passed through occasionally. But in 1930, Joe LaBelle, a fur trapper well known in the village, found that all the villagers had gone. He found unfinished shirts that still had needles in them and food hanging over fire pits, and therefore concluded that the villagers had left suddenly. Even more disturbing than food over fires and shirts with needles in them, he found 7 sled dogs dead from starvation and a grave that had been dug up. LaBelle knew that an animal could not have been responsible because the stones circling the grave were undisturbed. He reported this to the Northwest Mounted Police, who conducted a search for the missing people, but no one was ever found.
This story was the inspiration for Frank Edwards' 1959 book, Stranger Than Science. Other versions appear in Whitley Strieber's science fiction novel, Majestic, and Dean Koontz's horror novel, Phantoms.
It sounds a little The Thing-esque, too. You love those movies.
The Thing? Dude, that shit creeps me out. Fuck off.
It does. Soon as, like, in the original, soon as the dogs started getting all tentacly, you lost your shit.
I went under the covers. Nothing really creeps me out, but the Thing stuff, man. Anyways, there was never proof that this village ever really existed, but there was also never any proof that it had not.
There's never been any proof of any god either, but here we fucking are.
So that's it. That's the incredibly random episode about the true and untrue vanishing of towns.
Yep. And don't forget, kids.
Fucking corpses isn't funny or clever. It's wrong, it's gross, and it gets boring very quickly.
So yeah, that's the end of episode 1 of season 2. Thank you for listening.
Sorry that Autumn got so shit-hammered for the last kind of half there.
I'm not.
Yeah. And
stop the fuck off. Samir.
Thank you for listening.
We appreciate you.
If you like us, you can come support us on Patreon at 7 Circles Pod.
We are an indie podcast, and without your support, we would not be able to do this thing that we love.
Everything was written, produced, edited, and mixed by us, Autumn and Dan.
Thanks to Caroline Gates for the artwork and Null Machine for the music.
If you have anything to say to us about this episode, come say hi to us on the social media.
We are currently on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for 7 Circles Podcast. That's the number 7, not the word, plus circles like the shapes.
7 and circles.
Let's talk about...
anal?
No, let's talk about quickly why... So a lot of these stories happened between like the early 1900s and 1950. Like, so why do you think that these stories happened around those times? A lot of them were true, but some of them were not.
It's because people were still stupid and there was no way of really knowing if those things were true or not. Whereas these days we do know and we can find out. And we have Google Maps.
Yeah, the technology.
Probably.
Right. Yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people just, you know, they wanted to believe in monsters and UFOs and stuff.
And control, man. It's fucking government trying to control people.
It's easier to explain things away with the unknown when you don't know what's going on.
Never has a drunker statement been made.
Cheers.
So how much of that box of wine did you drink?
I've had 3 glasses of wine.
That's okay. A fucking blatant lie,
this
Autumn.
This is my 3rd glass of wine. I'm a lightweight now because I don't drink anymore.
Yeah, that's also a complete blatant lie.
It's not.
Down goes the glass. That one's empty.
It's not.
She's giving me evils.
I see your true color shining through. Don't be afraid. Oh, wait. We're not at the end yet. Let's do the end credits and then we'll do the... We're not doing Roll for Podcast anymore, by the way.
I mean, we might do again, but no. we already have the next episode lined up, so we're just gonna...
We got the next 3 episodes lined up.
2.
No more role for podcasts, so that shit was a nightmare.
Why was it a nightmare?
Because it just didn't work. Do you want a song?
Yeah, please, go on.
Do you want to do a song about... Yeah, do it. What song... Stop the recording so we can figure out.
No, I want everyone to hear how drunk you are.
I want everybody to hear how much of a cunt you are.
I mean, I don't hide that, but you're trying to tell people you're not drunk.
I'm not drunk. I've had 3 glasses of wine.
As she looks at her wrist to check her watch, which she's not even wearing.
I never wear a watch.
You have one eye closed. Fuck me.
Shining through. Don't be afraid to let them show.
Carry on.
No, I want to hear more. I don't know the rest of that song.
Okay.
Cyndi Lauper.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a Cyndi Lauper song. We need to stop and do end credits and stuff.
No, we don't really, do we?
Yeah, we do.
No, we don't.
Dude, I know, but like, are we still going to do the after the credits?
Oh, we've been doing that for the last 5 minutes.
I don't want to do that. I don't like it. I want to do something else, please.
What do you want to do?
Stop it so we can figure it out. It's a lot of editing.
Oh, I'm not editing any of this. This is just going to be 7 minutes of wasted autumn after the credits.
I'm not wasted. Your mom's wasted.
No, my mum was a waste because she limited herself to just one man all those years. Imagine the joy she could have spread.
I see your true color.
Why are you singing that? What has that got to do with anything?
Cyndi Lauper could tell to you.
Yeah, but what if she heard this podcast, how would she relate this to her song?
Because it's about...
Don't be afraid to let them show.
No, I want to stop it and fucking... Can we just do normal, like...
No, this is brilliant.
It's not brilliant.
It's not.
You're horrible.
I'm enjoying it.
Dan, please stop molesting your foot. Just...
Oh, I thought you wanted some toe jam. I'm a lumberjack and I'm not okay. They caved in my skull and it made me die.
So, you didn't hear about the... Did you have MySpace in England? Maybe. Was that a thing?
Yes.
So you didn't hear about the Mandela effect when it came out?
Possibly.
It was a pretty fucking big deal on MySpace.
It was?
Yes.
Go on.
I don't know how to go on more. We talked about it already. Like,
well, this was your idea, Autumn.
It was just a big deal. Like, I just wish MySpace was still a thing because Facebook sucks. But, like, you know how there's, like, Facebook memes and whatever? Like... The Mandela effect was the original, like, meme. I don't know. It was just a thing that everybody was like, oh my god, fuck yeah. Like, we remember this thing happening this way, but it's documented a different way.
So, multiple people made mistakes.
But we don't remember it that way. We remember it how it should have happened.
Okay. How it should have happened.
How it... Yeah, exactly.
What? I don't know, so...
So it's basically like, just because things are documented one way, doesn't mean that's exactly how it happened. Like you could go... Okay, for example, you're in fifth grade. You fucking punch some kid in the face because he kicked you in the balls. But the teacher documented it as... You were the aggressor, but that's not how you remember it happening because that kid kicked you in the balls first. Kind of, that's kind of the same.
I mean, that's just a mistake being made, right?
Exactly. And the hard-on collider happened, and then mistakes were made, and there's a different fucking timeline, and it's all like mushing together, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I do definitely feel like I'm like on some weird timeline or in an alternate dimension right now. You're confusing me a lot.
Good! You should be confused because this world is very confusing and scary.
Oh, and the dimension smushing, of course.
And you rubbed your toe jam in my mouth, and now that's all I taste is your fucking toe jam. So that's a thing.
I mean, it came via my finger, so
yeah.
It's not full-on toe jam. It's just kind of finger jam.
So that's what connects us in this timeline, is your fucking toe jam. The end. Goodbye.
My toe jam has been known to have many magical properties. Well,
have fun editing all that bullshit. Like,
yeah.
20 minutes of bullshit.
Well, you know, at least it was a high quality first episode for season 2.
It's easier to explain things away
with the unknown when you don't know what's going on. Going on.
I'm not drunk!
Finger jam.